Welcome to episode 358 of Fly Away. Here at Outleader Travel, we're passionate about, well, travel. Throughout the years, we've seen many changes to the industry, but one thing that has stayed the same is the urge to explore our world and make the connections that can only be made through experience. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Donna, and George. Ein, zwei, drei. As most of you know, we love a good beer here at Outlander Travel. We're especially fond of German beers, and there's no better place to get a great German beer than at Oktoberfest in Munich, Germany. It is the largest annual beer festival in the world that attracts visitors worldwide. The 16-day festival starts in September and ends the first Sunday in October. It all started in 1810 as a wedding celebration for King Ludwig I with parades, horse races, and plenty of food and drink, and continues to this day. We invited our special guest, friend and guest, Carolyn Belcher from the German Tourist Board to speak with us about Munich's Oktoberfest and other Oktoberfest travel ideas all around Germany. Welcome back, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for having me again, ladies.
Well, the fairy tale travels were so much fun that we wanted to talk more about Germany. So
yeah, and I just came back. So
yes, perfect.
I can't get any better than that.
Perfect. So let's get started. So I just gave sort of the dictionary definition of Oktoberfest, but what is Oktoberfest? Especially like, what does it mean to Germans? What is it that we should know about Oktoberfest?
It is just the biggest beer celebration of the year. Everybody is just waiting for that day to happen. And people from all over the world come together. And I was actually reading a statistic that 85% of the attendees at the Oktoberfest are actually German. So you can see how excited we are to be at that festival. And there are over 7 million visitors every year. So do the math. I can't do the math right now, but it's a lot of Germans. And it's just a traditional thing. We produce 5,000 different types of beer in Germany. We have 1,000 breweries in Germany, and most of them are actually in Bavaria. So we got to drink it all. And why not create the world's biggest beer festival in Munich?
I know. So let's talk, you just brought up the beers. So let's just get right to the beers real quick. Because I want to ask, I know a little bit about German beer and, you know, naming that many different kinds of beer, a lot of our listeners are going to be American and are going to be familiar with the American craft beer scene. And one of the things craft brewers loves to do is add twists and new ways to make things, and they add different ingredients. But Germany has something called the purity law. So can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that affects the beer and how there can still be such a wide variety of beers with the purity laws in place?
Yeah. So that purity law is actually 500 years old. And it was created 500 years ago to just use barley, hops, and water. That's all everybody was able to use. And it was only in Bavaria where they had that purity law. Later on, they added yeast to the, they realized we need some yeast in there. So they added that to the purity law. And it was really in effect for a long, long time. And then in 1901, 1902, I think, all the other states in Germany took on that law. Now, of course, you know, years ago, everybody started to craft their own beer. And then they started to add, like, I don't know, cranberry and some chocolate. And so the purity law is not like a law anymore, where you got punished because you changed something with a beer. But it's very important to us. And I know in at the Oktoberfest, for example, they only want to have a beer that was actually brewed in Munich. So they're really local breweries. I have to check. You might have to check on that. It might be Bavaria. I'm not sure if it's just a Munich or Bavaria. I'm sorry. You might have to check. But definitely local. And they also like to keep it like really simple. So you have, you don't have the IPAs there. You will have really the traditional German beer. And it's just very important for us. Beer is, people got to understand, beer is so important in our culture. I remember as a child going downstairs for dinner time, I always had to bring two bottles of beer upstairs, local German beer for my parents. That is just what they did when we were riding bikes and we went somewhere for lunch in between. My parents ordered a beer, and, you know, it's just something we drink to stop the thirst. And it's fun, actually. And then at the Oktoberfest, of course, we start in the early mornings already and drink our beer till the late nights. So beer is very important for our culture.
What's the drinking age in Germany, and do kids partake? too?
Yes. So the drinking age is actually 16, a legal drinking age for beer and wine, and the liquor would be 18. So yeah, it's quite interesting when I go with my American kids to Germany, and there they could legally drink, and here they can't.
Yeah, they would have like 5 more years before they can drink. Yeah. Wow.
So do they like German beer?
Is that a catch question? Yeah. I can't say this.
Of course not. No, no.
No, I've never had that. Never had beer.
So then how does the beer relate to Oktoberfest? Obviously, Oktoberfest is all about beer, but can you talk a little bit about how one is served beer at Oktoberfest? Like, what are the traditions that surround beer and Oktoberfest together?
So they get this in the big mass. Now, I don't know. I would have had to look that up before I'm eating here. How many liters are in a mass?
It's a lot. Know? It's a lot.
It's big, right? It's big. Like huge. It's I don't even know what's in there. I was never able to finish one. But that's a traditional way of having a beer at the Oktoberfest in a mass. Yeah.
So, and it's an outdoor festival, right?
It is an outdoor festival, but it has all of the tents. So it's going on outside and inside. Basically.
So talk about those tents a little bit, because I think that's something that, you know, everybody wants to get in the important tents, or they, you know, because some of these are invitation only, correct?
Yes, they are. There are some that are for like celebrities often. It's like, I think the Käfer tent, there are some that are very exclusive, but most of them are open for everybody. There are about 17 really large tents, and the largest one holds 10,000 people. And then we have about 20 smaller ones. That gives you an idea how big really the Wiesn where it happens really is. And then it's not like they're lined up next to each other. In between our rides, in between our booth, you know, where you can drink, buy something to drink or to eat, or you can play your games. It's like the carnival. You should envision the carnival the way it is in America, you find often. Mm-hmm. So it's a really large area. And so you don't need to pay in most of the tents that the regular folks would go to. You don't have to pay an entrance fee. You have, I would say probably 40% of the tent you can reserve tables. And the other half or the other 60% of the tent is first come, first serve. Most of the tents have only where you allow to sit. You cannot have standing. There's no standing room because it's just too dangerous. So once the tent is full, nobody else can come in until people leave again, and then the next people can come in. When you reserve a table, you need to purchase coins basically for food and food and drinks. It's like a, you know, food and beverage minimum kind of what you put down. But the tents are, you know, always super packed. People are jumping on the tables. They're dancing around. You have the bands. They're amazing bands. And they're just tables on the benches, and they dance. And it's just really a lot of fun.
So for the reserved seats, you mentioned you buy coins, sort of a drink minimum. So then for the rest of the tents, are you required to have a beer in order to sit down? Or is it just if you want to sit down, you sit down? And
Yeah. But everybody drinks. I don't think that's ever happening that nobody is drinking. But yeah, you don't necessarily have to order something. I mean, somebody in your group is going to order something anyways. Yeah. But it's not required.
With a festival that big, is there table service? Like, do they come out and take your order, or do they just
Yes, bring... somebody is coming. Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah, somebody's coming around. I'm not sure if this is in all of the tents, but as far as I know, somebody is coming around. Yeah, one of those beautiful waitresses that carry what? I don't know how many of those masks in the hand and just walks around and it's handing them out.
So that's even become an event in itself, is like how
They've
many mugs
some...
can they carry?
Oh, yes, muscles.
These women are carrying...
Yeah, and they're always these guys who are trying. Yeah, oh yeah, they have, it's serious business. And they are guys who constantly challenge those young ladies because they can't believe, you know, it's like, I can do this too. And it's so hard to really hold them for so long in your hands. And they have many of them, you know, holding their hands and then stacking on top. You should Google some pictures. It's insane.
It is crazy.
They're strong. Uh-huh.
It's crazy. So everyone, I think, has a mental image of what those servers look like. They're wearing traditional clothing. So can you talk a little bit about that clothing? I know you have some fun stories to tell about
Yeah, so we love the dirndl. So the dirndl is basically our traditional clothing. Everybody always thinks Germans, all Germans walk around in dirndl. I got to disappoint you, that's not the case. So the dirndls are really traditional Bavarian clothing, and you also have them in like Austria and Switzerland. They wear them as well. But the rest of Germany, a lot of different states have different traditional clothing, you know. So there, of course, in Bavaria, you have the dirndl. They are absolutely gorgeous. I mean, you often don't see the same dirndl in this, you know, the other people walking around with the same dirndl. It's just so gorgeous. They're handmade. They're not the ones you order on Amazon for Halloween. They're really great quality. So there is a thing, you have your dress on and then you have an apron, yeah, that you tie around you. So when you tie the apron around you and you put the bow on the right side, if you tie it on the right side, front right side, that means you're married. The way you know this is, or maybe you can try to remember, is we Germans, though it's different in America, we Germans put our wedding ring on the right hand. So you have your ring on the right and you have the bow on the right, means you're taken, you're married. If you put the whole thing on the left side, it means you're single, you're available. If you put the bow in the middle, that means usually it's none of your business. Leave me alone. And if you tie it in the back, that's often what the waitresses have. They tie it on the back, or you you are a widow, for example. And then, of course, it would be good to know this. If you tie it on the wrong side, it could be very interesting. Yes. And then men, of course, they have the lederhosen, and the lederhosen are such traditional clothing too. And lederhosen are not just fun to wear. They also, you know, they were made kind of to, it's deer skin. So they keep you also from the elements. Like if it's too hot, it keeps you cool. If it's too cold, it keeps you warm. So lederhosen are very, very traditional too. And that's what the men usually wear, even though lots of women wear the lederhosen now too.
And lederhosen is also Bavarian, correct? Or is yes. That all? Okay.
Yes, so. But you also see this again in like Austria and Switzerland, but lederhosen is traditional for
they're
Bavaria.
They're very expensive too.
Yeah.
Because so, they're usually done by, I mean, they're yeah, still done by hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you get one for $400 here in America, that's a very good price. Like they range, you can pay $1,000, $1,500 for a really good dress. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a wedding dress almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it nice. Seems like it's almost sort of an experience. And I haven't been fortunate enough to do a fitting, although I've considered it to shop for a dirndl, but it seems similar to maybe a kimono experience too.
In Japan,
where, you know, it's a very individualized experience and you pick the elements of it and put it together. So, yeah.
It's just cool. One of a kind piece.
Okay, so this is a party. We've talked about the alcohol, but surely
the
you
best
eat something.
Food is in Germany.
Yeah, you got to soak up the alcohol.
I hope.
Yeah.
So what are the traditional foods? Is it like a carnival where in America where everything's deep fried and
No. It's so funny. When I went to my first carnival, I was like, "What the heck are you doing with your food here?" Like, oh, but it's good. No, we eat like a lot of chicken, lots of chicken. So you have the grilled chicken, then you have the roasted pork, then you have lots of sausages and pretzels, and then cheese spätzle, like really traditional Bavarian food. We don't experiment on this. So it's really, you know, potatoes and mushrooms and like the Klöße, which is... Is there an English word for Klöße? I don't think you're that's like a dumpling, like a big dumpling, like the potato dumpling. That's the round thing. So you get this there. So very, very heavy, greasy foods.
Very
the
good.
Best for drinking.
I know you need pretzels to soak up all the beer.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Even the chicken. So you know, we've talked about food a lot on this podcast and like cruise lines and how much they serve. And do you happen to know the numbers of like how many chickens give their lives for King Ludwig's party here?
I'm sorry, all vegans and vegetarians. I always hate doing this. I know, but it's over 500,000 chickens that,
wow.
Yeah, that are, yeah, that's just the chicken.
I know, I feel like Germany just has to start over every year. all the chickens go away. And
what is it for? We should, I should Google what's like for Thanksgiving, how many turkeys are getting eaten on that day. That would be interesting to compare. I have to look that up, but yeah, over half a million chicken.
That is a lot of chicken. I
have a question about the tents, going back to that. You talked about how people could line up, and then when people leave, you could, you know, more people can go in. So is it necessary to reserve it, or how easy is it to just show up and kind of make a day of it? Or has it gotten to be so big that you should kind of plan a little bit more for that?
I think it's a very good question, because I talked to a friend of mine. She's a colleague and she's a Munich child, and she goes to the Oktoberfest. And when I said on a webinar, you know, you need to reserve a table, she called me and said, Carolyn, what are you talking about? You don't need to reserve a table. I've been 20 times at the Munich Oktoberfest and never reserved a table. So we talked about this, and she said, really, it depends on what time and what day you're going. Of course, they are like, and how large your group is. Like if you have smaller groups and you go during the day and you maybe go on a Thursday evening or Wednesday evening, it's not as packed as if you would go with a bigger group on a Saturday or Friday evening. So it really depends on where you're going, and also if you're really hung up on one specific tent. If you really want to go into the Hofbräuhaus tent on the Saturday evening, you might want to get a reservation with your group. So yeah, it really depends on. But it is so popular, and you're right, it's getting more and more popular, and people are spending that money, and they're willing to spend that money to make a reservation for the table. So if you, you know, if you're a tourist and you fly in for that Oktoberfest and you want to be in that tent, I would definitely make a reservation. We Germans, okay, if it's full, we go next weekend, you know, because we live there or it's close by. And so I think it's a different way of looking at it.
Do they is it going on 7 days a week during that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For a little over 2 weeks. So,
yeah.
So what are the must do tents? Like what are the not the must do's, but the sort of most popular tents?
I think it's a Hofbräuhaus tent, the traditional, very big tent. That's what everybody wants to see and go to. I honestly don't know all the other tents. I know they have like different themes. Some of them are like very old and have been there right from the beginning. Some have like a blue tent from the inside where it's all nicely, like it's a totally different vibe than, you know, some have the traditional music, some have maybe a DJ. So it's really different. But I think the real traditional one is just the Hofbräuhaus. That's what everybody is envisioning.
So are there tents that are like owned by families where, I mean, it's literally like you won't be able to go there because it's their tent. Like it's so old. Like I know at Hofbräuhaus there's, and at various breweries, there are tables that are sort of laid claim to by certain families. So I wonder if there are tents like that. Is that a thing?
I don't know. I really have to say, okay. I don't know. I was looking.
Well, maybe I made that up. I thought that there were. But.
No, I think they're.
Well, I know that they have their own mugs and they keep them at the Hofbräuhaus.
Yeah.
Right.
And you basically every time you go in, you go get your
right.
Mug.
But that's for the families. I mean, for the brewery itself. For the.
I thought I had it open. I had like the tents open. I was looking them up too, but they didn't seem to me when they were listed that they were private. They are belonging to an organization or the Hofbräuhaus or whoever, but I'm not sure if there's something where it's like private and you can't get
in. Okay. So Donna was just talking about the mugs, and actually George.
Well, they're actually Steins. I should have corrected myself. I'm sorry.
Sorry. And George just fact checked us as he does and said that it's the Muss. Is that what it's called?
A Muss. Yeah. Muss.
Is 1 liter. So, that is a lot of beer. I imagine those mugs are very popular souvenirs. Yes.
Oh yeah, they are. And you can buy them, you know, as a souvenir, but you cannot, like, you know, everybody in the Christmas markets knows the mugs from the Christmas markets. Yes. And you pay your fund, we call it, and the deposit fee, and then you can just take it home as a souvenir. That is not the case at the Oktoberfest. And there's actually a number where it says in 2019 there were 111,000 failed mug thefts. So 100,000, over 100,000 people were trying to steal a mug and they got caught, and it's not allowed. So you have to buy them, but not from the tent where you actually are. They're like outside booths and stuff where you can buy a mug.
Mm-hmm. So are there guards outside the tent, you know, checking your
tent? I don't know. I'm sure. I mean, there's security everywhere. You know, if you go in and out of a tent, there's security. So I'm sure. I mean, this is not something you can hide under your sweatshirt. You know, they all have the tight dirndl on and the lederhosen. I'm not sure where you want to put that mug, but that's a mask.
I will say it was my third trip to Germany before I bought a mask because I couldn't fit it in my suitcase. Yeah. I had for that third trip, I was like, I'm going to buy one, so I'm going to make sure there is room in my suitcase for it, because it is not a small.
Oh, item. No, I brought three home with me this trip. Three. I was like, I got to get them with me.
I should get my dad's. My dad was in Germany in the 60s in the army, and he's got some beer steins, and I never really paid a lot of attention to them, but now I want to get them. He was just talking to me tonight about his cuckoo clock, too, which, you know, doesn't work, but I'm like, well, who wants to hear that all night?
Exactly. It's just nice to look at. The rest is
So we've talked about hundreds of thousands of chickens who have bravely given their lives.
Sacrificed
and
themselves.
Then the liters and liters, hundreds of thousands of liters of beer that are consumed. Mm. This is an outdoor festival with tents. Where can one, you know, get rid of said things in nature's way.
I thought this was going somewhere else. This conversation.
Nope. It's a big deal for me because a porta potty is a miserable situation. But if there's only three of them for 10,000 people in a tent, that would be bad too. So how does this setup work?
So we need to get rid of 1.9 million gallons of beer. And we do this at, there is on the property of the Oktoberfest at the Wiesn, there are about 980 toilet seats.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's good though. That's good. Yeah, I bet there's still lines.
But then again, it makes you really realizing how big that thing is.
Yeah.
980 toilet seats.
Yeah, that's almost 1,000 toilets.
Yeah.
That's good. I can appreciate that.
Wow. Yeah, yes. Right. And you probably still have to stand in line when you want to go to the women's bathroom.
Of course we do.
There are probably 950 man bathrooms and the women.
So they all just have a trunk,
Always.
That is, I will say, in the U.S. in general, there are more men who drink beer than women. And I don't say that in a sexist way. I say that as someone who's gone to beer festivals and not had to stand in line for the bathroom, while all the men that I was with did have to stand in line. So yes, one place where you might not have to stand in line. So, okay. So if you're an American going to the beer festival, you can obviously do a lot of things very close to these tents, but you can't sleep there. So what do you recommend as far as how you get to and from the festival, when to go, where to stay? Can you give some ideas there?
You will not believe, but there are a lot of people who sleep actually at the Wiesn. You will find them everywhere. It's funny. Oh, it brings back so many good memories. if you are at the main station in Munich, you can easily, accessing the Munich Oktoberfest is really not an issue. You can walk there, you can take the subway there, you can of course take a taxi as well. And because it's so centrally located, there's so many different opportunities where you can sleep, from a hostel to a hotel to 4-star, 3-star, whatever you want. Or also we call it the Pensionen, which is kind of like a bed and breakfast. A lot of people offer, also their Airbnbs, but anything that you want to book or stay at, you need to do early in advance, because they're a year in advance sold out. And especially now that it got canceled for the second time for next year, it will be insane. People want to go. They're ready. They had planned already to go in 2020 and got canceled. So you have to do this early enough. And I know a lot of people who can't get anything in the city anymore, even go outside the city. And still, you can easily access then the Oktoberfest.
So we're about a year out. So you just mentioned this year was canceled. Let's just touch on that a little bit. So I can't imagine that Munich just said, okay, we'll cancel Oktoberfest again. So what is Munich doing to sort of try to make up for the fact that Oktoberfest is not happening?
Yeah, they had that. It's actually really cool. They had that last year too, and they did that for the Christmas market last year as well. So what they did is they put like these rights, they call it Summer in the City, I think, a campaign where they put these rights throughout the city that you would usually see at the Oktoberfest. Not all of the rights, but like some of them. They're very, let's say the ones that are really popular and where people are just standing in line to ride on them, also the Ferris wheel. And they put that throughout the city. And then they have also booths, you know, throughout the city where you can buy, you know, the little Lebkuchen heart, the or gingerbread heart, and you can eat nuts and you can drink. So they want to bring still that, because Oktoberfest is such a tradition and really belongs to Munich, and the Munich people love the festival, and this is what they are waiting for all year. So they don't want to take this completely away from them, and also not from the tourists that are still coming to Munich. So they made sure that they will implement some of the Oktoberfest into the city of Munich.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, they did that with the Christmas market too. And then they had like drive-through booths where you can just drive through and get your currywurst, a bratwurst, and a glühwein. No contact. It was really cute.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's awesome.
That is really lovely. Okay, so next year, Oktoberfest is going to happen.
Yes.
And we are about, as you're listening to this podcast, we're about a year out from that. So I'm assuming some things are already booking up. So do you have suggestions? It's a 16-day festival. It sounds like you already talked about maybe looking at middle of the week as a better option than weekends. Like where would one find the holes if everything they want looks booked up? Beginning of the festival, end of the festival, what are the best times?
Oh gosh, I don't know, to be honest. I think it will be so packed, especially next year. Like I said, it got canceled. I think every day will be totally insane, but I do believe that you will get more local people on the weekends because they don't take time off. They go on the weekends. So I'm sure that you will probably get more out of it on a Tuesday or Wednesday, because then Thursday, Friday, Monday could be again those, we call it bridge days, where people take off Friday and they can already start partying on Thursday and they're off till Sunday. So I think this, if you want it, you will not get peace and quiet, and you will not get like not a packed tent. But I think your better chances would be at the beginning of the week, and it doesn't matter when really. It's still only like two and a half weeks.
And to fully experience it, how many days should you hit the tents?
I was actually reading a really funny article about a guy that had planned on staying with his drinking buddies. I think he came from the UK for 3 nights. And then a German local person was like, so how long are you going to be here for? And he said 3 days. And she said, are you crazy? Like, why would you want to go for 3 days to the Oktoberfest? And he realized at the end, this is like for us, it's like a sport, drinking the whole time, right? You got to be really born for this. But he said, in his article, 3 days, like at the end, he could not see any beer anymore. So I personally think 1 day is plenty, and then enjoy the rest of your stay in Munich and do something else. You know, I think that you really experience in 1 day the Oktoberfest vibe. I mean, you cannot go into every tent anyways, but you can walk across. And even if you come back for an afternoon just to walk across it again and get some more food and some more drinks in, yes. But I think like the real tent experience, if you have one evening, that's good. Okay. You have experienced the Oktoberfest.
So, and then, you know, with a festival this big, you sort of think that the rest of the city must just shut down in order for it to happen, but you can still do all of the things you could do in Munich on any other day.
Oh yeah. And the restaurants have the same thing. They have like the Oktoberfest celebration. So even in the restaurants, you get your mass and you get your chickens and the pork and all of this too. So they have these celebrations, and that's for Germany in general. If you go to any German restaurant during the time of Oktoberfest, their theme is usually the Oktoberfest. So you get your Obatzta, which is like the cream cheese dip, and you get your pretzels and the beer. So that's very, very traditional to do in Germany during that time.
So we just talked about how crowded it's going to be. And some of us on this podcast really hate crowds, but really love beer. So can you talk about some alternatives? Surely, you know, you already said you could go to a restaurant and have a mini Oktoberfest. But are there other things that maybe people don't know about that would be sort of a fun alternative to Oktoberfest, or maybe even at a different time of year, other beer festivals that you might want to talk about?
Yeah. So I think, so what I always say, if somebody wants to experience the Oktoberfest but doesn't want to have the really large areas and the crowd, you know, having so many people around, look into going. It's exactly at the same time. It's actually a little bit longer than the Munich Oktoberfest. It's in Stuttgart, and it's called the Cannstatter Volksfest. This is also our beer festival. It's way smaller. I think they have only one large tent. You don't need to make a reservation. You have the same thing with Carnival, but it's just not as packed. It's a very lower number. Stuttgart and Munich is not far apart from each other, so if you can't find anything in Munich and you can't find a hotel to stay anymore, maybe consider going to Stuttgart. But we Germans, like I said, 5,000 different types of beer. We are drinking and we have celebrations all year long. And so there is a thing, it's called Kirmes. It's spelled K-I-R-M-E-S. And those are like festivals we have everywhere in Germany, in the small villages, in the bigger cities, in the towns. And they're the same concept. So let me tell you, I'm from a small village, 1,000 people live there. And we have that celebration every year. So what it is, it's a tent, maybe 400, 500 people fit in there. We have a band. We have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have outside the tent a ride. Then we have some booths where we can buy food, our sausages and our candied nuts. And the kids can hang out. There's like a kids zone. And we celebrate all night. It's the same concept. You stand on the table, on the benches, and you party, and you have the German folks music, and it's such so much fun. And you find these, like what it is in Germany, we have like little communities, or like what do you say, clubs that travel from one kirmes to the next. So there are like, I don't know, 20 towns next to each other. So we all visit each other's kirmes. So these clubs go from kirmes to kirmes on each weekend, and it's so much fun. So if you are, this is like the real, this is for me, this is for me, the Oktoberfest, those kirmes. They are so much fun. And you really get in touch with the local people, and not all touristy. It's really the local people. And it's amazing.
And those happen year round? You know, you could.
Yeah, usually not in the winter. It's more like an spring to late fall. Thing that you will find. Yeah. But if you go to one of the city, like if you go to Germany, just Google if there's a kirmes. Maybe you're lucky and there's a kirmes at that time, and then go. You don't need to wear a dirndl. Just go.
What if?
But you can, George, if you would like to.
Yeah.
Sure. A dirndl.
How hard is it if you don't speak German?
It's not hard at all. It's we Germans love to bust out our English knowledge and tell, show you how well we speak English. So we start speaking English or learn English already in kindergarten. So anybody you speak to usually does speak English, and they're really trying their hardest. You even sometimes get like menus in English. And when you drink, Sandy, everybody speaks the same language. Like,
it's really not an issue.
Yeah, beer.
Beer.
Yeah.
Everybody's really good looking. You know what that means.
Yes, amazing. Good looking and Chinese and everything I can speak then.
Well, yeah, but the problem is when you point your finger and you're an American, it means one. In German, it means two.
That's a problem.
No, it's not a problem. Not a problem.
It's actually funny because the first time I experienced one of those Moss, it was an all day experience. I didn't have anywhere to go. I was enjoying German beer. That was my plan for the day. And I looked at that thing and I thought, this is going to be the only beer I have. And I had more than one. It's totally possible. After one, it's like water. So.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, you don't notice until you try to stand up.
So. Oh, yeah.
So you find the bathroom, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. A super special thank you to Carolyn for joining us tonight. Thank you so much for
sharing Oktoberfest
with us.
Thank you.
On behalf of Donna, Sandy, George, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.